and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem.
And I'm going to interrupt. I'm going to interrupt and I'm going to jump in this time round because you do a lot of the introductions. And actually, I came up with this idea because you mentioned this in passing in a podcast that came out late last year. That's 2017. You just happened to say, I think it was when we were talking about cowboys and we were talking about banditry and things like that. You were mentioning about highwaymen. And I thought, do you know what? This is just Greg all over, isn't it? And I've picked you when you're a little bit down, you know, you're just recovering from a cold now. But I figured I would say, you know, why don't we do something about highwaymen in history? Because I'm going to now make you sound incredibly smart. You made a very valid comment that the romantic era of the highwaymen in England in particular tended to happen after periods of great turmoil and things like the English Civil War. And I found that really interesting. That's really stuck in my head because banditry, people robbing people on the highways and roads of the world, is certainly not a new thing. And generally, bandits are seen as a bad thing. But you're quite right. There are certain moments where they kind of step away from their day job and almost mean or symbolize a kind of rebellious streak. They're sort of pushing against the society of the time because the society is seen as immoral, unjust, unbalanced, and therefore, yeah, they're robbing people, but they're robbing the rich and they're being cheeky and all that kind of good stuff. So that was the sort of fermenting idea behind this all. And I therefore throw it over to our resident expert on highwaymen, whether he likes it or not, Greg Chapman.
All right, I've suddenly become a resident expert now, have I? Yeah, it does fascinate me. And it fascinates me in much the same way that I'm fascinated by, for example, the idea of piracy and things like that. The fact that these are evil, you know, these are generally speaking not good people. They are, you know, running around murdering. They are definitely murderers. They are criminals. They are stealing. And yet somehow they end up being these great figures of romantic interest and everything else. And one of my original inspirations for getting a bit interested in the idea of highwaymen was a poem that we studied in school. I don't know whether you have known The Highwayman by Alfred Noyes.
The introduction there was, I know the highway rat, who's by the same writer as the Gruffalo, but not that one.
I'll read the opening stanza because I think it sets it up nicely. The wind was a torrent of...
Just one second. I've ruined it again. I've interrupted, but I'd like everybody, regular listeners to this podcast, pause for a moment. This is the moment we elevate the entire podcast. This is the first time we're going to have printed, sophisticated poetry on this podcast, read by a juggler. Off you go, Greg.
Okay. The wind was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas. The road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, and the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. He'd a French cocked hat on his forehead, a bunch of lace at his chin, a cloak of claret velvet, and breeches of brown doeskin. They fitted with never a wrinkle, his boots were up to the thigh, and he rode with a jewelled twinkle, his pistol butts a twinkle, his rapier hilt a twinkle, under the jewelled sky. And this poem carries on in that vein about this highwayman, and he's visiting his lover, and he ends up getting captured, or he ends up getting chased and pursued by the lawman, and all of this, and basically he becomes his hero, and the people that are trying to catch him become these incredible villains. And that description of him as this beautiful romantic figure, never a wrinkle, he's posh, he's sophisticated, and yet part of what we have listed there are his guns and his sword. You know, this is not a man who's, you know, going out, even he's not even just a con man or something else, which is another line of work which we end up kind of to a certain extent giving this status to another criminal class is the con man and in recent years heist movies.
Greg, you have blown my mind. That is clearly a well-known, famous poem, which I didn't know. But now I'm going to read you the opening stanza, or verse, whatever you want, whatever they're called, of The Highway Rat, because I suddenly thought, oh, that's why it has that rhythm to it. Because she's basically taken that and made it a kid's story. So here's the opening bit. The highway rat was a baddie. The highway rat was a beast. He took what he wanted and ate what he took. His life was one long feast. His teeth were sharp and yellow. His manners were rough and rude. And the highway rat went riding, 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 riding along the highway. So it's, I always wondered why it had that bit in it. And it's because of the original poem. Oh, Greg, you've learnt me. You've schooled me today. Thank you very much. But yes, it's really interesting. Why is it, and we've said this before, pirates, they have the best PR in history. They're rude, dangerous people who kill without a second moment's thought. And yet they're seen as good guys and child friendly. And here we got another example of a highway. You know, funnily enough, bank robbers aren't generally turned into kids' poems. Or, you know, I'm trying to think of other things, you know, armed robbery, you know, of a bank, something like that. You know, it's cat burglary is considered a bit more child friendly. But yeah, there could be no doubt about it. Now, perhaps the most famous highwayman in British history is Dick Turpin. Would you agree with that? And what do you know about Dick?
I would say that's probably these publicity things. From what I gather, a lot of the stories we associate with Dick Turpin are kind of borrowed from other highwaymen, especially, I believe, the infamous ride, his infamous ride on Black Bess, I think it was, his infamous ride to prove that he was in somewhere far away from where a crime took place. I believe that's actually attributed to another highwayman, and he kind of borrowed the story.
Right, see, the... Because from what I understand is, well, first of all, he was executed for stealing horses. And you might think that's a bit tough at those in those days. But we are talking about sort of the early 1700s. And horses were both extraordinarily expensive and also quite often people's livelihood as well. So you could understand why you'd have such a severe punishment for that, and it wasn't really any different during, say, the cowboy era as well. The horse rustling was a very, very serious crime. But like the pirates, what you have an image of a highwayman, an image of a pirate, and actually Turpin was living during the time of the golden age of piracy as well. But actually, he didn't do that much. What he did was bad. And there's certainly not a lot of indication that he was the gentleman thief or anything like that. Would you agree with that?
I think that's fair enough. And the thing is, let's not forget that especially in Britain, we have this tradition of the noble highwayman in legend form dating back as far as Robin Hood. Robin Hood, essentially, you know, a huge part of the story involves him hiding go through in their carriages, him and his merry men robbing them of all their goods. Depending on the legend you read, rather indiscriminately. And so if you're looking for a hero, you've just had a time of civil war in this country, perhaps put yourself in the position for a moment of... put yourself in the position to remain in Europe and lost. And we see a lot of all sorts going on, loads of kerfuffle, people... Basically, in the Brexit debate, and, you know, I'm now comparing Brexit to civil war, which is a dangerous thing to do, but as a modern example, we've gone political. Well, I'm not even going to go political with it, because I'm not making a point on either side. My point is, we've got a really divisive issue, and if you look through, you know, Facebook feeds, look through the newspaper, everybody is trying to...
We've gone political
here,
people.
...make a bit of
people.
A hero out of the people who stood on their side of the debate and not the other side. And I think... If you are post-Civil War, you were one of those people that suddenly you haven't got the king in power. Reported the king have gone off and become highwayman. Legend of Robin Hood. Robin Hood fought against an unjust ruler, according to the legends. Suddenly, the idea of romanticising these highwaymen suddenly does take on not just a social edge, but also a slight political edge as well.
I would agree with that. And... linked to both the highwaymen and the pirates, of course, the really successful ones are the ones that kind of went legit. Like, you know, with Blackbeard the pirate, we all know the story about him and the fact that he ended up sort of going down in a blaze of glory. But the earlier pirates, quite often what they did was they caused havoc in the Caribbean, and then the British government co-opted them, and they ended up becoming governors of places like Jamaica or the Dominican Republic or, you know, things like that. And if we go back in time, one area, I've said this before because I quite like this line, Russian and Chinese history is easy. It's the same as everybody else's, just a lot more people die. But actually, when you look at the amount of times dynasties in China have collapsed, and then there is a period of civil war is perhaps one way of putting it, anarchy is another. Just everything breaks up into small territories, and there are these bandit kings. You keep hearing about these sort of bandit kings, and some of those ended up getting their act together and actually raising armies to conquer or at least cow other local warlords and becoming emperors. And if not emperors, then at least generals in armies, again, being co-opted. So they started off doing some very dodgy things, but because they were very good at them, it was a case of, all right, fine, just join us. It's easier to make you part of the solution rather than part of the problem. In which case, they had some pretty good lives, but they weren't necessarily nice people. Generally, when you see these sort of rise to power, these naked rises to power, you just realize that the way you do that is not by being a nice person. You have to be pretty ruthless, and you have to be willing to put aside concern and empathy for other human beings. The ones that were sort of a little bit more half-hearted about it or small change about it, they're the ones who end up becoming the martyrs and the sort of like heroic heroes, even though they were no such thing in their lives. One last thing, and I'm really going off piste here because I only recently learnt this. One of the biggest killers in history, who again came to power through revolution and stirring up trouble, was Joseph Stalin. What blew my mind is before he became a Bolshevik revolutionary, do you know what he was studying to become, Greg?
No, I don't.
We're talking about one of the biggest killers in history.
Yeah, I'm guessing he wasn't studying to become a highwayman, which would seem...
He was in seminary. He was learning to become a priest. And actually, although he had also become a bank robber as well after that, one of the other things is he was a published poet. And his poetry, his Georgian poetry, was considered both nationalistic and romantic. People didn't even realize that it was Stalin's poetry. And it was sort of read into the 1970s as sort of in schools in Georgia, which shows that he was genuinely a good poet. But he must be obviously the most lethal poet in history, because once he got power, my God, he became an absolute monster of a dictator. But, you know, if there's a human being that turned into something so much worse, again, about this power. And he didn't do that by becoming an even better romantic poet. He did it by basically killing people. And that's generally a lot of history in a nutshell.
I like that. And I am aware that time is moving on, as it always does. And I would not forgive myself if I didn't kind of cover a couple of highwaymen and their stories as well.
Oh, please do. Yes, we've mentioned one, but let's get some more in there.
We've mentioned one, but there was one in particular that I wanted to bring up, because I do find one of the stories about him just brilliant. Have you heard of a highwayman called Walter Tracy?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so we're actually going slightly earlier than sort of what I would consider to be the main height of highwaymen. About the late 1500s, 1596 he was born. And he was the younger son of a Norfolk landowner. He went off to university and he got in a bit of trouble for reasons that we don't need to go into here. He got into a bit of trouble at university, basically for being a young man and not for doing anything crime-wise. And he went off and he started to get into highwaymaning. And actually, at one point, he held up Ben Jonson, the playwright. Held him up, stole his horse, and tied him to a tree along with a few other people that he'd stolen horses from in that particular...
Well, just to pause on that for a moment. So, I mean, there's an example of something that perhaps sounds a bit innocent now, but of course, in the 16th century, tying someone to a tree on the side of a path, there's no guarantee somebody's going to come that way for days. You know, people could starve to death or, you know, maybe be attacked by things like wolves. You know, being tied to a tree in the kind of middle of nowhere, that's not a noble thing to do to anybody. I mean, you understand why he's doing that, because he's trying to steal stuff and move away. But there's literally nothing noble about what you just said.
Definitely not. But I will tell you about a time when, not noble, but you know, sort of we see a little bit into this softer heart of Tracy quite early on in his career as a highwayman. He was heading, he met up with a scholar. He was in a tavern, one of the many taverns frequented, as we know, by Heron. And he met up with a scholar. And this scholar was on his way to Oxford to join the university and to, you know, make his way in the world. You know, friendly young man. And he told Tracy, for reasons of his own, that he was carrying a bag with £60 inside it with him, which, you know, we're going back to the early 1600s. That £60 is a lot of money. So Tracy, nice guy that he is, says, well, I'll tell you what I will do. I will come with you to Oxford and I will guard you and I will look after you. So the two set off, and obviously Tracy, being in his early days of his highwayman career, as soon as they got out of sight of the town, he turns around, draws a sword on this poor guy, and relieves him of the bag of money. This is your normal, typical highway robbery. This is quite horrible. But then the scholar apparently breaks down, starts crying, goes on about the fact that he just wants to learn, he just wants... Until eventually Tracy actually relents and takes £4 out of his own pocket, gives it to the scholar, gives him back £4, and sends him on his way. Now, it carries off, leaves the scholar goes off on his own way. Now, you may be able to see where this is going, Jem, or you may not. At the fantastic ending of this story is the moment when Tracy discovers that the bag that he thought contained £60 is actually just a bag full of stones. So what we're ending up with here is a highwayman who not only failed to rob this scholar, but paid him £4 not to be robbed.
Yeah, not a great criminal enterprise there. The opposite of organised crime, that is very much disorganised crime.
It is, and it's one of those stories, and again, it's one of those stories that starts to lend a bit of heart to this highwayman character. It starts to, you know, lend him a little bit. Oh, look, but he did give this money to the scholar. And you could build on that. You could build up this idea of this romantic highwayman. You could take that, mix that with another couple of stories, and suddenly you've got Robin Hood. Let that story become a legend. Suddenly it stops being, you know, the highwayman tried to rob him. Suddenly it becomes, oh, this highwayman met a scholar and gave him £4 he could carry on along his way. At the end of the day, Tracy did actually get sentenced to death and executed by the time he was 38 years old.
What was he sentenced for, by the way?
I'm not sure what his actual sentence was for, actually. I'm not sure what the actual crime he was eventually executed for was, but he was executed for, I believe, many and various crimes, but I'm not sure what the final one was that got him.
Okay. And I've been corrected on this many times, so I'm sorry. I'm going to be a pedant too. Meat is hung, human beings are hanged. So I hate that one, and I apologise to you for saying that, but I just, it's ringing in my ears right now.
But according to the rumours of why he got kicked out of university, no, I can't do that joke, this is a family podcast, sorry, I'll leave that one. You can fill in the gaps yourself.
So, I liked your phrase there that for being a young man. I think that if you're a young man or an older man, you know what that means. So, you said you've got another guy as well.
Well, that was the one that kind of just sprung to my mind. We've talked a little bit about the idea of Robin Hood, and I am jumping through my mind now because I'm trying to think of another story that, not just that I can tell, but one that I can back up with evidence. Because one of the big problems is that when we start looking at the highwayman, a lot of these stories, a lot of these legends, like I say, we know with Tracy that he got Johnson, that he robbed him. We know that because Johnson wrote about it, but at the same time, we also know that a lot of writers occasionally make things up. And obviously a lot of the details of a highwayman's life are things that are going to come out at the end of their lives, in trials and things like that. There is no highwayman sitting there writing a diary account of their life. So when we get all these fabulous little stories, we always have to rely on exactly what the evidence of it is. I'm racking my brains. Have you got anything you want to talk to us about for a minute while I rack my brains?
Well, I was going to say that the other one I'm aware of is Claude Duval. Have you ever heard of him?
I've heard of Duval.
So what I understand is, I mean, this is, you know, how much of this is strictly true is, again, up for debate. But it makes a good story. But Claude Duval, I think you can guess, he was French. And he very much played up to that when he was robbing people. And apparently, according to the women that he was robbing, his manners were impeccable. And, there are some occasions where he would sort of like, basically, flirt with the ladies. On one occasion, dance with the ladies. While, of course, robbing their husbands or brothers or uncles blind in the meantime. But, you know, he was quite the charmer by all accounts, except from the male point of view, where he's just an irritating Frenchman stealing their money. But unsurprisingly, it's another example where, you know, he was doing this, as you said, you know, perhaps a decade or so after, after the Civil War, you know, during the time of the Restoration, where England was still settling down. Things weren't a done deal yet, but he was obviously arrested and he was hanged again. So it's another one where, you know, most of these guys, it doesn't end well for them, which shows you they're not really long-term thinkers. They're just going to keep doing it till they run out of luck. And that's not a great plan generally in life.
It's not. And actually, I've got one more example that's going to bring it around. And actually, this is one of the idea of exactly how the Civil War created this idea of the highwayman. But it also backs up your point of know when enough is enough. Now, this is the gentleman called Captain Philip Stafford. And Captain Philip Stafford was a royalist going through the Civil War. And as a result, at the end of the Civil War, he lost everything, basically. His properties were seized and he was left entirely penniless by the parliamentarian forces. And so, you know, you can see the situation. He is a soldier. He is had everything taken away from him. His side has lost the war. Obviously, you know, he's going to think about using his military skills to start to bring himself back. And so he becomes a highwayman. One of the slight problems with him making this a whole, you know, this isn't fair, I'm a royalist thing, is that he was in no way discriminatory about who he stole from. It wasn't like he went after parliamentarians solely. He stole pretty indiscriminately, but he did actually manage to plunder enough money that eventually he managed to move up to the north of the country and he became a minister. And he could quite easily have retired, lived a nice, gentle, good life up there in the north, except for the fact that he kind of couldn't quite give up the highwayman lifestyle. And he just went back out, he got back on the road, he carried on being a highwayman, and he was eventually sentenced to death. And he was sentenced to death for robbing a farmer of £33, just outside of Reading, actually. And this is kind of like, he'd got to the point where he could have retired, he could have given it up. And at that point in time, I think there's something more than just shows how this lifestyle, I think the same with piracy. Many of them didn't retire just because they'd made their loot. There was something about the lifestyle that was appealing as well. However, the important thing about him is how he was executed. He was hung, but on the day that Philip Stafford was hung, he was wearing a brand new suit. He was a very expensive brand new outfit he'd bought with some of his money. And he went out and he was supposed to have shouted out royalist declarations from the scaffold. And if you think about this, you're a member of this public, and the executions were public, crowds would gather to watch them. You are used to seeing, you know, sort of poor, dishevelled people being executed, part of controlling people, and they're brought out and they're executed. And I would imagine the vast majority of people in that situation were pretty run down, pretty beaten. And then you get this this gentleman coming out in all of his finery, walking out looking very, you know, uncaring, very nonchalant, very cool, right up to the moment when they're hung. You can sort of see how at that point in time, the idea of this highwayman, this gentleman robber, starts to get its legend, starts to get the appeal to the masses.
I love that one. Yeah, I love the fact that we're talking about a minister who was also a highwayman. And I'm just going to add right at the end, and I know we basically run out of time. Unfortunately, this is slightly complicated, so just bear with me. There was a period in papal history where there was more than one pope at any given time. And nobody knew during that time, you know, each of these popes would say, no, I'm the real pope. No, I'm the real pope.
No, I'm Spartacus.
Exactly. But it was only after that period that the church went back and went, okay, it turns out he's a real pope. And any of the ones that weren't real popes were referred to as anti-popes. So technically, it wasn't a pope who was also a pirate. He turned out, in hindsight, to have become an anti-pope. But John the 23rd, this is sort of round about 1410-ish, you know, in the Middle Ages, before he was a pope, he was a pirate. So same sort of idea as minister slash highwayman, although in the case of your one, he was a minister and a highwayman at the same time, which is probably not what God would have wanted.
I do like the idea, just before we leave that, talk, I do like the idea of the Catholic symposium or whatever it was, where they're sitting around deciding, you know, you've got these two popes. Okay, we've got these two popes. Which one was the... Okay, really difficult. We got these two popes. Which one was the real pope? Oh, I don't know. He did good stuff. He did good stuff. Okay. Which one was the real
they
pope?
Had to do it for about, a dozen of them. More than a dozen, actually. So,
It must have been a day they went in, right, we got another hard day today. We've got these two popes. This one pope, this one pirate. Oh, okay. Let's go home. Early lunch, guys.
Yeah, we'll break for lunch early. Okay, right. That's us done on this one. We have to make it short because we're about to do an interview, aren't we?
We are indeed. So, very quickly, got a quick plug, Jim?
Yeah, I'm going to mention the Sultan's book again. So, the Ottoman Empire there, all done in one book. Enjoy.
And I just mentioned Philip, who was hung just outside of Reading. So, I will say on the 14th of April, I am doing two shows at the Rising Sun Arts Centre in Reading. Find the details for that on the Condensed History's Facebook page if you're anywhere in the area, and come along and watch an evening of comedy with me. But for now, thank you very much to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem DiDucci.
And to my wonderful co-host, Greg Chapman.
And we'll see you again next week. But for now, goodbye and take care.